respond to the movement. And he's doing that by exhausting and perfecting by what Paul Callahan sees as well. Also, I'd like to invite our distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Last month, the Prime Minister gave a major speech on the government's economic agenda. In the course of the speech, he made reference to six policy drivers that are fundamental to the government's drive to boost New Zealand's economic performance and improve our standard of living. One of the drivers is innovation, and a significant driver of innovation is the government's investment in research, science and technology. As a country of 4 million, we have to work out where our scarce science funds should be spent. Large countries, such as the United Kingdom, are grappling with this issue. And the reason is the nature of the global economy. For instance, it takes around 300 million people to provide all aspects of a modern economy, witness North America, Europe, East Asia. So the smaller the state, the more care needs to be taken in setting priorities. Thus Britain, with 60 million people, does not undertake every possible scientific effort. It is now, in fact, establishing broad priorities. So if that is required of a country the size of Britain, it is clearly more urgent for a country of 4 million. We all know in this room that New Zealand has been lagging behind other countries. We have had historically low productivity, and that has led in turn to lower growth rates. The effect has been a decline in our relative economic position. As a result of that, the overarching priority of this government is economic growth. So where does research, science and technology fit into this scheme? Because we invest our public money in science not for science's sake, but actually because we want it to lift economic performance both directly, indirectly. It does not mean that we will necessarily spend more money. In the current fiscal environment, that would be a considerable challenge indeed. But it does mean we have to spend it more effectively. It doesn't mean, of course, that we'll be focusing all of our money in short-term strategies. But what we do have to do is develop a talent pool of New Zealanders, build long-term research, and then research that underpins economic and social foundations of our country. So if lifting our economy is the principal reason we invest in research, then we need to get maximum value from the $745 million we currently invest. And that, of course, is Vote RST. Vote Education, PBRF and so forth is in addition to that. So it's a question of more effectively aligning our science expenditure with the overarching goals. Today I'll be outlining how RST will play a bigger part in improving our economic performance. This is the start of a process that will be completed by the end of the year. It will directly engage the key participants in the sector, i.e. the people in this room. I have 4 major themes that I'll be discussing today. The first is enhancing the migration of science from the laboratory to the marketplace. The second is understanding and improving the way that we strategically invest in public good science that underpins the economy. The third is directly boosting economic growth through more effective market-driven research. And the fourth is simplifying the entire system. These themes are not obviously only my creation. They have come from a wide range of discussions of scientists, users and interest groups. And over the last few months, I've had numerous meetings with individual groups, sector groups, C CRIs, private research firms, universities, and a wide range of businesses that are conducting research. I'll now turn to each one of these four things in more detail. The first thing is to enhance the interaction between science and the marketplace. We as a government want to push good ideas out into the commercial space, and we want to improve the ability of businesses to connect with science and pull science through to realise commercial opportunities. In short, science, businesses and venture capital need to get closer together, and we need to open the pathways to do that. But I also recognise the importance of serendipity. So much of the modern world stems from unexpected discovery. But we simply shouldn't rely on hope in that regard. We must make it easier for businesses to be exposed to the range of research being conducted in universities and CRIs so that the connections can be made. And if it happens across all areas of research, from incremental improvements through to disruptive technologies with breakthroughs, clearly lead to step changes in our economy. And I just want to refer to one particular example. Yes, I'm heard because it is my alma mater. Uniservices, the commercialisation arm of Auckland University, is a good example of putting together scientists and researchers with businesses to boost growth, and Uniservices now has a turnover in excess of $120 million. The bulk of the funding for fundamental research clearly flows via PBO and to a lesser extent Martin funds. We need to ensure that science of commercialisation can be recognised through the PBO system. That is one of the specific goals I will be focusing on. I might note at this point that the 2009 budget placed particular emphasis on fundamental research. So, for instance, the Marsden Fund was increased from $50 million to $60 million, a 20% increase. And it's noteworthy that the fund sets no particular priorities other than the excellence of the research itself. And so a question I would ask is whether we should be considering setting broad strategic goals in relation to the allocation of that fund. Many researchers already know, in fact, that the pathway, the enduring pathway for greater funding, is to be able to bring in other funders, and that frequently involves a commercial focus to their research. The second theme that I want to talk about is what we often call public good science. It is, in fact, enabling science that supports our present and future economic base. Environmental, hazard, oceanography, risk management, and a host of other essential research play a vital role in underpinning our current economy, and that provide research that will lead to further opportunity. Research in this area is largely undertaken by the CRIs, and indeed is one of the key reasons why we actually have CRIs. The most important priority in this area of public good science is to better manage long-term investments. So, for instance, last week I launched the Natural Hazards Research Platform at GMS. It brings together leading research interests in the area and provides a cooperative construct for them that will last at least 10 years, but in truth, realistically, beyond that. This strategic approach to funding recognises that in many areas what we actually have to do is build science capability on the core expertise we have and indeed will always have. And there really is no value in having contestable funding charades which then create inefficiency and uncertainty. Long-term science needs long-term commitment. This enabling science, of course, also needs explicit priorities set by governments in conjunction with stakeholders and indeed the marketplace. We can't do everything. We have to focus on what matters to us. Hazards is an obvious area, but there'll be others that are reasonably solid and evident, including environmental science, biosecurity, oceanography. And I'll be welcoming your input in refining and actually developing these priority areas as finding is necessary and vital. We are also sending the signal through that platform approach that sharing and growing expertise is to be encouraged. And I would also refer to the example of the course within the universities that reflect that. But there also must be the opportunity for new ideas and people to get into the platforms or indeed develop new platforms. One of the issues that has arisen is the nature of the incentives. Ask this question. If a CRI generates an idea that is worth $1 million unto itself, or more broadly, $100 million for New Zealand, then what should be our objective? I thought the answer is self-evident, and we do need to manage the objectives that we set for the CRIs in ensuring that we can maximise national benefit. So I might say on this point that the Natural Hazards Research Platform is a template for future developments in this area. And we'll be clarifying key priority areas and we'll be funding them on a more strategic, long-term and collaborative basis. And this is the work that the Foundation is doing. The outcome, in short, will be a more balanced and consistent funding for the CRIs in particular. On their part, however, they need to ensure they have the right connections across the sector and also on a commercial basis as well. I should also refer at this point to other initiatives that the government took in the 2009 budget. So for instance, we did substantially increase funding in the Health Research Council from $63 million to $71 million, because quite clearly the health of the people of New Zealand is fundamental to our country. It's noteworthy that the bulk of the HRC research is high technology, but we also must take regard to the broader health and social research, which deals with our population issues and health and social disadvantage. The second particular commitment we made, as I mentioned, is the pastoral science commitment through the primary growth partnership. This funding, which is in fact delivered through Vote Agriculture, will rise to $70 million in 4 years' time. It will deal with difficult problems, including agricultural emissions, and will also ensure basic advances in food technology and so on. My third theme is how research, science and technology is explicitly aimed at economic growth. It tends to be firm and sector-facing and is driven in large measure by market demand. And this will be a particular focus in the 2010 budget. The priority, in short, is to improve the transition from concepts to reality in the marketplace. We want to ensure that the applied sciences move to an end goal that can be more clearly measured. And that'll be one of the priorities that the Foundation will be undertaking. So funding decisions by the Foundation will be made against real progress. They're doing great work in that already. But obviously I recognise that in many cases, science investments do have quite long time horizons. That is particularly true of the biotech and pharmaceutical sectors. Nevertheless, it's still possible to measure progress on them. Also, what I refer to is something of attention between land-based economy and high-tech industries. In truth, they're actually both for tech. New Zealand's prosperity depends on us being at the leading edge in our pastoral sector, and our science underpins that at quite a fundamental level. So clearly our largest investments are like and will be in the land-based and food-based science. What the Prime Minister has referred to as culture, agriculture, aquaculture, viticulture and others. And they are actually at the heart of the New Zealand economy, providing 2% of revenue. And I note, looking at Paul Callaghan, that Fonterra actually produces $500,000 of revenue for every person employed in Fonterra, plus all the farmer suppliers to it. And very few New Zealand firms can show that level of success. And we know that is built fundamentally on the application of science. So we will be building on the strengths and expertise that New Zealand has. I should note also, unlike what you might call manufacturing services, the bulk of the research in this area is undertaken by CRIs on a sector basis, such as work on agri-research, farming food, shrine, land care, and to some extent, NIWA in the agriculture space. But other sectors of our economy are also vitally important. New Zealand does need to encourage growth in these areas and also reduce risk by diversification. Should note, there's a long record of this in New Zealand, governments are notoriously bad picking winners. But the marketplace and those who commit their own capital do in fact effectively select the winners. And what government does is leverage those who successfully pick themselves. So Paul Callaghan set this out simply in Baltimore Weather, stating that the crucial determinant of funding for economically focused schools should be the quality of the proposals, the science excellence, the potential for innovation, and the entrepreneurial capabilities of the team. Now we do recognise that time horizons do differ across industries. So for instance, to develop a new pastoral species will often take a long time, 20 years or so. Conversely, in the IT sector, in many cases the time horizon will be a matter of months. So the government will be carefully examining the various support schemes to ensure greater clarity and measuring the requirements for funding to support. There will, however, I should note, substantial room for starters. We just have to do that, to pull through the innovation. Now, I might note that much of this firm-facing research is funded by TechNZ. So funding by TechNZ, their investments, require matching investments also by the firms itself. That's the existing rules. And we do this, of course, in New Zealand because we do not have salary depreciation or we do not have R&D tax credits. The advantage, however, is that we target the results of what we want. And it's noteworthy that it covers the full range of New Zealand's competitive advantage. I want to give you five examples. So last week, the Foundation announced $5.8 million investment in viticulture. The film industry in New Zealand actually generates as much revenue as the wine industry. The digital technology of Weta lies at the heart of the future of the industry. And you only have to look at huge interest in the upcoming film Avatar, which is in fact the most expensive film on the planet. Weta Digital provides crucial technology in that field. And the investment from Forrest will directly create 200 jobs on the existing 550. But in addition to that, it will undoubtedly lead to further spin-offs and new businesses from within that firm, and will anchor the role of Bollywood in the global full ministry. Tate Electronics have had to shift their technology platform from analog to digital. That's a step change in technology. And they've had substantial tech in their support. So what were the results? Well, they've had an increase in sales from less than $10 million in space to over $43 million within 1 year of making this major transfer. And it's expanded markets, not just to New Zealand, but right across the United States in the security sector. An interesting thing about the United States is it's a massively large market, but it consists of literally hundreds of small police operations. They are able to service the size of those markets with the productive base that they have. And so this investment will keep research and production jobs in Christchurch and build that whole technology cluster within the Christchurch sector. In the health sector, Orion Health specialises in ICT products. And government investment through the foundation has directly leveraged Orion to double its turnover by $45 million in 2 years to take on nearly 100 additional technology staff. And imagine the multiplier effect of that as well. You have to take that. And this sort of return is not only confined to large companies. So MagicTech is a spin-off of the McDiarmid Institute, had significant funding from Forrester, as well as New Zealand and offshore venture capital. And after a relatively short period of time, they now have 8 staff and approaching $1 million turnover. But it's the future that is more important to that relationship. And this is a new technology and will lead undoubtedly to more spin-offs. In the primary sector, the gains have ranged from new Apple varieties through the massive research and development efforts in the dairy sector, of course. Fonterra is New Zealand's largest private investor in science. But there are also technology spin-offs. Robotics Technologies, for instance, is predicting a turnover of $40 million in automated boning machines, which also saves substantial processing costs in the processing plants themselves. And in addition, in the primary sector, the CRI has conducted sector-wide research ranging from improving vast varieties through to animal genetics. Now, each of those examples was deliberately taken from different industries with different time frames. But there is a common ground in all of them. They focus on improved economic growth, and they focus on technology and innovation. And the foundation funds this because it enables these businesses to make decisions they could not necessarily otherwise make. They simply don't have the capital to do so. I have, in this process, directed Forrester to increase their focus on a better understanding of the economic return of these kinds of investments. So we need more timely and accurate reporting on the investments, and that is all part of future assessments undertaken by the foundation. Some of these larger investments do, of course, raise some questions, and we do need to understand and think about it. Whether the government should, or the taxpayer more accurately, should it also have an explicit return on the investment as well as the implicit return. So what do I mean by this? Well, the general force rationale and what I've talked about in my examples is increased employment, bigger tax base, broader opportunities and spin-offs. But where there is substantial funding, we should also ask whether there should be an actual commitment by the firms themselves to provide a more direct return on the public investment. That would then allow, of course, the foundation to increase its level of future investments, either in those particular firms or elsewhere. Both myself and my colleague Joe Brownlee are looking for feedback on this particular issue. I want to now turn to my fourth theme, and it applies across the whole system. What we intend to do is make it simpler for the users, whether they be scientists, CRIs, scientific teams, universities, or businesses. The foundation already has substantial work underway to achieve this. I've had numerous discussions with the CEO of the board of the foundation to focus on this particular issue. It was actually the very first thing that was raised with me by stakeholders when I was appointed science minister to focus on this issue. So, greater clarity as to why the funds of science, exactly where the money goes, will then assist the governments making strategic choices for the future. So this is what the funding picture looks like now. This, I might add, is only the tip of the iceberg. There are a vast number of appropriations, small funds, sectors and barriers and so forth. And everyone without exception says we need to be able to do better than this. So we do want to take a more strategic approach. The intent, as I've indicated, is twofold. The first is to make it obvious to applicants what funding stream is relevant to them, rather than hunting across a range of funds and then skewing the research in many cases to try and fit within the constraints of the system rather than focusing on doing the science. The second I would suggest to you is actually more important. It would enable a much better sense of the priorities that the public should fund through both RST. So this is one proposal of what the structure could look like on a more simple and more understandable basis. And I'll be asking people in this room to input into this process over the next few months. I just want to also make a couple of more comments before I close. One of the things that we have done is we have appointed a chief science advisor to the Prime Minister, Sir Peter Buckley. And I can tell you, he has taken to this task with great enthusiasm. And I urge you to read the speeches. They are well worth reading. And I can tell you on this particular speech, he and I have been talking and have been exchanging speeches on the social media actually speaking today at Ag Research. And I would like to think that you would see a synthesis of the approach that we are taking around this. So we are looking at ensuring that science investment is more directly connected to increasing economic growth. I might also add that the government is undertaking an overall review of business assistance, today, and research, development, and commercialisation. That continuum is part and parcel of that process. It does involve a joined up process, and it does involve, in particular, myself, Minister Jerry Brown, the Minister of Economic Development, and of course the Minister of Land, Finance, the language. And it does, at the institutional level, mean looking at the linkages between the Foundation and NZT. Ladies and gentlemen, today I set out the four themes. Summary, they are: first, improvement of the ability to migrate science from lab to market. Second, increasing and building more certainty in public good and enabling science through long-term strategic funding. Third, boosting the results of growth-oriented research, more particularly firm and commercialized research. Finally, simplifying the system to allow efficiencies for users in particular. And implicit in those themes is the priorities that the government will be setting for RST. And you'll note that I haven't set those priorities out in this speech, but they will be reflected more clearly than budget 2010. And I have to provide specific policy direction to Cabinet by the beginning of December this year in order to meet those timeframes. So today's speech is the start of the process of setting these priorities. I will be seeking the input of key stakeholders during so, much the same way as the speech is a product also that level of consultation. The stakeholders will, of course, include science themselves, the Royal Society, the business sector, and in particular, Business New Zealand CRAG, and both the ministry and the foundation will be taking a key part in coordinating this process. The Chief Science Advisor to the Prime Minister will also be taking part in this process, and many of you will be aware of the stakeholder meetings beginning 14th September. The priorities will then determine the best way that science can directly and indirectly build the economic growth of our nation. As Sir Angus Tait has said, our technology is our sword. We keep it strong and bright. And therein lies the path forward.